Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han. Hello, Han, how are you?
I'm doing marvelous, Jim. We are, let me give you a quick weather report. It is night here. It's been raining, overcast all day long. So I feel the pains you guys have up there as well.
No, you don't, because it's below 30 degrees and cold and windy and just nasty. I mean, you can't even get warm in this weather like we have up here, but that's all right. Wait a week. It'll change.
Well that's right. We're in Ohio.
Wait a week. It'll change. Wait a day.
Yes.
Well, tonight we've got a really, I think a fun and interesting topic that we want to discuss, and it really has to do with impressions. Tonight's topic is episode number 22 of Straight Talk. Does a nice-looking place really help? Now, that's the question we're going to delve into. Obviously, if you'd like to call in and ask a question of Han and I, please feel free to get us on our direct dial number of 657-383-1442, and we'll try to answer your question to our best ability. But your practice is a reflection on the service that you provide. The impression that it makes on your patient affects your bottom line more than most people think. Has definitely a direct correlation to the success of a dental practice. So much so that we have noted historically that any practice that has been remodeled or built new typically will see a 20 to 25% instant increase in their patient come day one, once that new facility is open. So tonight we're going to discuss this topic to help you determine what is the best things to do, and maybe is it really time that you need to do something with your existing facility. We're going to look at those important areas, which ones make the biggest impact. And obviously this information is very helpful for anybody that's looking to spruce up your place and without a doubt make an impact on your bottom line. So many folks that have come to Han and I and asked us what should we do with this particular place. We've seen so many photographs and designs or floor plans of places that, you know, just didn't work. The doctor felt we need to do something. Well, let's face it. Dentistry is a people profession. We know that. Most healthcare professionals fall into that same category. And the best way is you need to be able to meet people and let those people become comfortable with you as a person and trust. They trust you. And one way to do that is to provide a very warm, a very inviting, a very clean feeling experience when they walk in the door. People want to feel welcome. Dentistry is a competitive business. There is always someone else around the corner or around the bend who can do it or can do the same kind of thing you can do. So how do you differentiate yourself? And the architecture and the aesthetics of a space is just one way. One that we feel very strongly actually has a big impact. We all know that you want to grow your practice, and that one of the most important ways to grow your practice is through referrals. Well, how best could you get a referral from a existing patient to another family friend or cohort, if you could provide a environment where they feel extremely comfortable in. So to us, it's almost a no-brainer, but at the same time, we want to discuss this because a lot of times there's the resistance to, do I really need to spend this kind of money to do this? Or should I even bother doing that because it's been working fine for the years and years and years? Hon, how many times have we heard that before?
All the time. It's all the time. It's I think you look at the aesthetic of your office instead of looking at, do I need to spend? Maybe you should look at what do I want to invest in to make it look better. Naturally, there's always a question of how much do I spend and what should I do. It's a hard thing to get your arms around because it's so personal. But it's important that you do it right with the right balance so that you achieve the aesthetic level that you need. That also will fit within your pocketbook. Yeah.
Exactly. It really is. It becomes like a balancing act of where should I focus this attention to give me the best impact on the perception of the practice. And we're going to talk about that in the second half of tonight's show because there's a list of, I have seven areas that you want to focus and probably in this order, and you can walk down through those. And if you check off the first few, then you know you're in the right direction. But I mean, human nature is such that we're attracted to new and we're attracted to different spaces, and we're just drawn to them because of our curious nature. So that's really the main reason why you can see that we've seen that drastic increase in clients and patients coming to the door when you open a new facility or you open a newly renovated facility. People are just naturally curious. New, for some reason, has this connotation of being better. Obviously, inherently, it's cleaner. Obviously, it is, potentially it's exciting. And once you've got the patient in the door, then it's up to you and your staff to provide the service necessary to keep that patient. And that's a whole different topic, one that obviously would be perfect for Dr. Bill to join us with, and maybe we'll get him to join us on one of those topics and go through that. But our focus tonight is really to deal with, okay, how do we get the patient in the door and make them feel comfortable and welcome so that you can then provide an exceptional service, which then will keep them coming back and then telling their friends and family and associates that, hey, you've got to go see Dr. Such and Such because they've got a really great place. It's really an enjoyable experience and exceptional service. I mean, just like a bank, for example, banks are the way they are. I mean, a typical bank, they spend quite a lot of money on the exterior of the building, utilizing some very stately, expensive materials and architecture like stone columns and brick and those kind of things with, possibly granite and stone and glass. They do that for a reason, because they want to portray stability. They do that by using stately architecture. Well, a dental facility can also portray what they're trying to portray by the architecture, that one of warmth, welcoming, openness, and cleanliness. So you can receive really a high success by that first impression, by using the architecture and the design and the materials that you place. And these don't have to be expensive materials, do they, Han?
No. No, it's not. I think the misperception is that for it to look great, it had to be expensive, and that's not true. There's so many techniques, so many ways that you can do things or make things look like something that's not. You know, for instance, you can actually make a plain drywall wall look like it's made out of marble to full finishing. So, yeah, it doesn't have to cost a lot. So a cost is not an excuse.
Exactly. That's the perfect example. Cost is not an excuse to not have something that's attractive. You can make inexpensive materials attractive and inviting and clean just by things like selection of color, their proper use and where they're placed, so that you don't have spaces that are super noisy, for example. If you have all hard surfaces in your lobby as you walk in, and it's extremely hard to hear because the sound's bouncing all over the place, there's everybody's talking, and the experience that the patient has when they walk up to the front reception desk is they can't communicate properly with the receptionist. The first experience is a lousy one. It's not because they don't have expensive high-end finishes in the lobby. No, it's because they were used wrong and the wrong kind of finishes. So all of that makes an extremely important role in the success of a space and how it's used. Because Han and I's role as the architect and the designer is to solve your needs so that the space functions properly. And then we also do that so that it's aesthetically pleasing. It's a pleasing experience to everybody that walks into that space, but mostly it has to function. And if it can't function, you could have the world's most expensive materials and it'd still be a total failure. And our goal, of course, is to not let you do that.
Let me add to your statement there about function. Yes, aesthetic has to do a lot with colors and finish and just the overall ambience. But the perception of how your space, once they enter the lobby or the waiting area, really matters. And part of the overall objective include placement of physical elements. For instance, I see so often now. Jim was talking about coming, the normal activities, the transaction, communication between a patient and the front desk. It's important if both parties can hear each other without shouting, because of the ambient noise is so loud. I see this a lot. The desire for dentists to have amenities that give their patient a sense of being treated special or pampered, like a beverage bar that where you can get hot cookies and a thousand one varieties of beverages. Okay, there's a place to place that. Versus plunking it down next to the reception desk, because it's a place, it's almost like taking your drinking fountain and put it at your front door. It interferes with the necessary business function. It brings secondary traffic to where it's not necessary. It intrudes into the privacy of the patient. And then it put people, physical body, next to where you need the openness or the privacy to conduct business. So placement of elements, whether it's design or feature stuff in the wrong place, will mess up that objective of trying to achieve the experience or the aesthetic or the perception that you're trying to fine tune.
Yep. Exactly. So great architecture, as we define it, is one that combines functionality with aesthetically pleasing finishes and materials and spaces, so that the experience is a complete experience that allows for every aspect of how that space is used. So let's use an example. Let's say you have a retail center. You're going into that retail center, and typically most retail centers do not have vestibules as you walk into the space. Well, we try to build into our designs a vestibule so that when the door that's open to the outside, the either hot air or cold air, depending on what season you're at and where you're located, doesn't rush into the lobby, and that the patients that are sitting there don't get to get blasted by this rush of hot air or cold air and become uncomfortable, because you're developing that patient, you're developing their impression of you by your space, by the architecture and how it is put together. And let's say you're sitting there and it's 2 degrees outside, and you were to open that door and this blast of cold air hits the patient in the face, their impression is going to be, oh, this sucks. You know, this is just not a positive impression. And we all know that obviously your job is to be the very best you can be as a dentist. But you can't be that unless you turn new patients into loyal patients. You know, patients don't look for just treatment options or insurance coverage. They look for compassion. They look for care. They look for warmth. Because when they go home at the end of the day after the procedures that you performed or the procedures that you recommended that you were going to be coming up from, they want to be reassured regarding their health, their dental health. And architecture, especially great architecture, directly impacts that. So it has a direct relationship to your bottom line. If you can keep those patients and turn them into loyal patients who are then talking to others and turn them into new patients, it's a win-win-win, because we all know the very best kind of patient is a referral patient. They've already gone through the vetting process because they're friend, their family member has already said, doctor is the best. You got to go see him, because they've already had great experience. And so that new patient that's coming to your door already has a great impression of you as a dentist. You reinforce it by the architecture, and you very quickly can turn new patients into loyal patients. Now, one of the other areas that a lot of people don't really realize or understand that it actually does have a big impact is, especially nowadays with social media. Social media, I mean, we see it all over the place under the marketing folks for dentistry that say, you know, you have to have a Facebook page, you have to have a website, you have to use Twitter, you have to use YouTube. Everything else that's out there to get onto the social media world to be able to project your practice and market to everybody that's out there that's surfing the internet. Well, we're visual people. We look at things. So when you're on all of these platforms, YouTube, Facebook, you take pictures. Well, those pictures are a reflection of your practice. So a photograph of a 1970s lobby with a whole bunch of smiling people in it gives one impression. A photograph of a very attractive, warm, welcoming, clean, nicely designed space that is, you know, that has a level of current design to it gives a totally different impression. And it's a far greater impression. So even though the same folks might be located in the same two photographs that you put on social media, the background matters. And your background is your space. It is your architecture, and it's how it has a direct impact, again, back to your bottom line. We're in a competitive market, obviously. Dentistry is competitive. We talked about that before. And you want to keep those doors open, and you want to keep them coming back. And so, again, I guess we kind of want to reinforce that it's crucial that you at least take a look at the key areas that we're going to talk about here in a minute and focus on those spaces so that you can maximize your ability to retain those patients and turn them into loyal patients. But here's two other rather unique areas that most don't understand actually happen out there. From a staff standpoint, when staff feels better about themselves, they project that feeling in their service to the patient. So one of the easiest ways to help the staff feel better about themselves and about their day-to-day business of what they're doing is to provide a better working environment in a more attractive space. It's just a natural kind of thing. I guess I like to put it, you know, you feel better about yourself if you put on some nice clothes and you dress up a little bit. I mean, typically you just feel better about it. Well, it's the same kind of thing that if you do the same with your space and the architecture, you feel better about everything that you're doing because you're in a nicer space. Wouldn't you say that we've seen that happen so many times, Han?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of there's a lot of psychological points to that. Is that if they work in a nice environment, nice, clean, upscale or environment versus something that's outdated and soil and stuff like that, they have a different attitude about going to work, and we have not addressed relationship and the dynamic between the staff. We're just looking at strictly the physical environment they're in. Okay, if you have a choice of working in a nice office versus a dumpy office, it's a no-brainer. So it's it plays a important role in a day-to-day attitude of the staff, and that attitude reflects on how they interact with your patient, interact with each other, interact toward you, the owner. Give them a sense of pride if they have a place that that they enjoy working in. And that place don't have to be brand smacking new. It just have to be clean, aesthetically pleasing, well kept. Again, it's not about cost, because it's not a good excuse. Because we know you can do a lot aesthetically for very little money. Jim?
Exactly. I mean, not that I'm saying it's the end all and the only thing that you should or shouldn't do, but a new paint job can do amazing things to a space.
Yes.
But picking the right color or colors or combination of colors can turn a dull, boring, uninviting, dreary space into something that's warm, inviting, pleasurable, and just something that provides, you know, visual delight to the people that are in it. Now, we all know that you and your staff are in that space a long time. You're there all day long, every day that you have your schedule. They're there, meaning your staff and their and your associates are there maybe more, but they're still there quite a long time. So providing a space that has good natural light, that is warm and feels comfortable, again, is clean, just adds to the joy that the person that's in there experiences. So you've got that relationship with your staff, you've got that relationship with yourself, you've got that relationship with your clients, the patients. So all three get to experience this same kind of environment. That's why we're so passionate about this, that we go to the trouble of trying to, you know, go through a topic like this, because it makes a difference. The color that you put on the wall, or what you do to the ceiling, or what you do to the floor, makes a difference. There are some great colors, there's some great materials, and then there's some bad colors and some bad materials. And sometimes it depends on where you place them, that a good material becomes a bad material if you place it in the wrong place, or vice versa.
Or a color, or a good color that become a bad application because it's in a bad place. I mean, color, texture, material do affect people's mood. Okay, now, for instance, for me personally, if I walk into a dark home at the end of the day, it changed my mood. I can be as happy as I, you know. Yes.
It's depressing.
Okay. That's why I'm down here, Jim, because I need the light.
Right? I know.
Okay. So it's it's a matter of now. Lastly, or let me just throw this in. Of course, there is a personal taste versus a professional design job. Okay. I don't know how many dentists would want to have a patient in their chair telling the dentist what clinical procedure and how to execute the treatment plan. I haven't run into one that say, come on in, tell me what to do. So if you're going to hire a professional to help you to put together a design package, you know, select new materials, select new colors and what have you, let them do their job. Let them, you know, have their say and propose to you what would be, what they think would be do the, you know, the job and meet your objective. Don't hire a professional to tell them how to do their job. Okay, because they'll cost you a lot of money, a lot of waste of time, and a lot of frustration for the entire team. Okay, I'll get off of that subject, Jim.
Yeah, well, there have been books, actually a series of books that have been written on how colors affect your mood, and how finishes and materials affect your mood, and we agree with those, that there are things that need to be done and things that you should never do, and we would work through that. Now, again, remember, the way we do things, it's not our space. It's not our building. It's not our practice. It's yours. So we're going to give you options. We're going to give you ideas. We're going to give you directions and say, this is what we would recommend in this particular area. This is what we would do in this particular area. But the decision ultimately is yours. I guess there's a little infomercial about what Han and I do. But it's your decision eventually You've got to live with it. You've got to be in that space every day. Your staff has to live with it. You know, you're paying for this thing. It's not ours. We're not paying for it. We're just there to provide a service for you to help you be the very best you can be from function, from aesthetics, from all the things necessary to be able to set you up to succeed. And so, again, that's why we're so passionate about this, that we want you to succeed. So we're going to talk about those aspects. We're going to talk about those little things that maybe some people say, well, that doesn't really matter what kind of stuff I put on the floor. Oh, yes, it does. It does greatly matter what you put on the floor.
Episodes are not geared for the business owner or the dentist to say, you know what, I'm the boss. My staff don't need a break room. They don't need a bathroom. You know, they don't need this or this or that or that. No, this is not the discussion for those business owners. This is the episode for those that that value the dedication, the commitment that their staff have to building the process with them. You know, their team members. Jim and I and other design professional, if we do our job right, is to help you to get the best return for your investment when it comes to aesthetic and I mean, because the building itself serves as part of your marketing tool. Our job is to make it, you know, to make the best of it for you so they can get the best return for that investment. Jim?
That's correct. The building is really your sign. It's one of your biggest signs. We've been in so many places around the country working on other projects, facilities where, you know, you have minimal signage allowed. Zoning says you only get to have, you know, a few square feet of a sign stuck on one wall of the building. Well, your building becomes your sign. Your building becomes your identity. And what identity do you want that to be? You want it to be an outdated one that belongs back in the 70s? Or do you want one that's fresh and new and exciting that's going to attract a whole bunch of new patients and going to keep them there by the service that you provide? Now, another area that you really need to consider is creating the space, the architecture around your patient. What patients are you looking to market to? It's a different kind of thing if you're in an upscale neighborhood in a very affluent portion of the country. That's one type of architecture as opposed to a more rural environment that those folks may get turned off by that kind of architecture as opposed to the other. I mean, the impression that you walk in the door is, holy crap, I can't afford this guy or girl. Look at all these high expensive materials that are used in this space. He's charging way too much. Let's just go someplace else. Do you want that kind of impression? No. You want the impression of, you know, this is a warm, inviting space that works well. So you have to balance, and that's where we come in. We help you balance the architecture so that it makes everyone coming into the space and utilizing your place comfortable. I guess we like to equate it as better than their living room, but just slightly.
Yeah, Jim, it's that particular topic there, it holds very true. If your demographic is at a certain economic level and things like that, and you personally go, yeah, but I really, really want to have something that belong in, you know, New York City, you're out of place, okay? Bob the Farmer is going to come in and say, like, I think I'm going to go down the street where it makes me feel more at home with my, you know, with the folks that I can connect with. So the aesthetic is important, that needs to be balanced based on your demographic that you're servicing.
Exactly. And, you know, because obviously in this competitive market, you need to stand out. But you have to be very careful in how you do that so that you don't stand out badly in the sense that, oh, my goodness, you know, it's a new space. It just went up and it's all this slick, hard, modern space just doesn't feel warm and inviting. Well, you know, maybe if you were in Chicago and your clientele demographics is young urban professionals and that comprises 99% of your clientele, well, that would fit fine. But if you're not that, you have to be so careful. So architecture and design and interior design is so crucial on your bottom line, because you can make or break a practice no matter what you do and effectively fail before you even get started. You know, we all know that you want to get your patients in the door and then let your service keep bringing them back. So lastly, before we jump into the specific areas that, you know, obviously if you have a question or you want to call in, please feel free to catch us on our dial-in number. That's 657-383-1442. And always you can get more information about Hannah and myself and what we do and the things that we've done on our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Now, there is an area that a lot of people don't think about, but from a business standpoint, if you're at the point that you are preparing to eventually transition out of your space or transition out of the practice of dentistry, and you want to poise yourself to be able to get the largest return on your investment of all the years that you put together, creating your client base, the practices that you've built, whether there's one or two or three of those. Well, attractive spaces appraise higher, and they also draw associates better. So if you're properly designed, if you're a functioning space that works very well, it has a clean, inviting, slightly above impact when you walk into the doors, you will draw much more interest by associates than you would being the opposite of that. You know, if it's an old dingy space, it's from back in the 60s and 70s, you've had little maintenance to it, little upkeep, the space doesn't feel clean, even though maybe it is clean, it doesn't feel clean, it doesn't look clean, the carpet's worn. Those places make it very difficult for you to attract associates and bring them into the practice and eventually be at a point where maybe they'd want to buy you out and take over your practice and transition you out as you desire. So most people don't realize that, but it is crucial. And the bottom line, it affects the bottom line. So let's take a little bit of time and talk about what are the areas that you really need to focus on. We've touched on a little bit about it, but we want to do a little bit more in-depth discussion. The number one space that you want to have the biggest impact on your practice is going to be that entry lobby. It is so crucial within the first 30 seconds of a person entering the space, they will make a impression. They'll make a decision about you and your practice before they even talk to anyone, before they've asked a question, before they've even said one word. Their impression, 99% of the time, is already established in that first 30 seconds when they walk in the door. Now, you might say, well, that's really not fair. We didn't say it was fair, did we, Han?
No, we didn't. Jim, you gave him too much time. I mean, 30 seconds. I think most people will come to that conclusion within the first 5 seconds they enter the building.
Well, that's true. Actually, they begin that when they walk up to the doors. But sometimes you really can't do anything about that because that's not in your potential adjustable scope. So if you're in a retail center, the parking lot is the parking lot. You can't really deal with that. The sidewalk is the sidewalk. You can't really deal with that. The canopy is the canopy. You can't really deal with that. Now, if you can, definitely deal with it. But if you can't, then you can't. But the minute they walk in your doors.
We're talking about places that you lease and not places that you own outright, where you have more control of what the exterior can be. We're talking about, you know, rental, the lease space like retail strip or medical office building or commercial office building and things like that, where you have little to no control on what the exterior aesthetic would look like. Hopefully it's good.
Yep, without a doubt. And keep that in mind when you're looking at potential places to move into. You know, what's it like driving up to that retail center? Can I find a parking space? You know, it'd be great. Sure. Hey, well, this is a magnificent retail center. The parking lot's always full. Well, might not be the best place for you to go into because if the parking lot's already full, where are your patients going to park? That's the quickest way to turn patients off and make them drive down the road to somebody else because they can't find a parking space. And so you got to think about those things. But let's say you especially like the outside, if you own the building or you're building something new, then all of those impact in that first, you know, 5 to 30 seconds, what it's like. You know, is there enough parking? Do I have the ability to walk unobstructed from my parking space to the front door? What's it like walking to the front door? What's, you know, am I getting poured on because there's no canopy? Is the snow coming down and hitting me because there's not protection? Or, you know, is it a covered, inviting entry vestibule system that lets me transition into the building? Everything from the type of door and the type of door handle impacts what's going on. Are they automatic doors that just instantly open as you move up to them because there's a sensor? That, you know, that's a different level of experience. Sometimes that's a really good one.
Jim, who doesn't like a Star Trek door? Huh?
Well, exactly. But, you know, why do you think grocery stores have those kind of doors? They have that because they want to invite you into the front door of their store. They want you to come in. They want to minimize your effort to be able to get in those doors because the minute you're in the door, you're making them money. And there's been studies on that.
Spend your money.
That's right. There are studies on that that just even the type of door and the size of door can make a difference as to the bottom line. It affects what you're doing in dentistry. So that entry is crucial. And also how it's placed. How is the entry placed within the lobby space? You may have the most perfect, welcoming, warm, inviting entry that, you know, bathes you with warm, perfectly conditioned air as you walk from the outside where it's cold into the new space, and it's just a joy. But you walk into a lobby that you have to, you know, you're like the rat in the maze to work your way through the chairs and the materials that are in that lobby to get to the reception desk. Well, you've hit a home run at your front door, but you failed because the impression gets soured because all of a sudden the patient says, well, you know, this is crap. I don't want to, you know, I feel uncomfortable already. If they didn't know better than that to put all these chairs in my way to let me get to the front door, what are they going to do to me when they, you know, open my mouth?
Yeah, you know, Jim, that's we call that the runway effect. is that you come to the front door, and you have to go all the way across the lobby just to get to the reception desk. And in that path, you get to walk the runway. Everybody stare at you. As human, it's kind of uncomfortable for a lot of us. Often, because the dentist, because the dentist space is usually a lot smaller than a hotel lobby, and people that when the patient come in for the first time, you want them to recognize and know exactly where to go, almost immediately as soon as they come to the door. So we normally place the reception desk closer to the door. That way, they have to walk in and scan the space and trek across the room on the runway to get to it.
Okay? Exactly.
It's convenient, and it settles them down quickly.
Yeah, within a few steps. I mean, a good architectural design is that once you've entered the lobby from the vestibule, you should be able to take more than two or three steps, and you should be at the reception desk. And you definitely don't have to do hurdles and circumvent a whole bunch of stuff to get to it. Then the next most important is the reception desk. Everything around it, everything above it, the desk itself, the person behind it, and what's behind them is crucial. That is a very important image maker. It will solidify the first initial impression that a person has, or it will do the exact opposite. So if I were the new patient and I walk up to the reception desk and everything feels, this is really a cool space. It's nice and light and open and airy. I could walk into the vestibule. I'm real comfortable. I walk right around the corner. There's the reception desk. And then I look at everything behind the reception desk, and it's this disordered clutter of crap. There's stuff all over the floor. There's files all over the place. The business office is over there, and they're working away diligently, and there's stuff scattered all over the place. It's totally unorganized. What impression have you just done? You've taken a great impression and destroyed it. Hon, you were saying?
It's chaos, Jim.
Chaos. That's chaos. Right. That's a good word. Thank you. Yeah. I didn't think of that word. It's total chaos. Well, does that relate to what you're going to do to me when I go back in the chair? Chaos.
The reception desk is, got to be the prettiest element in the room. It speaks for itself. This is where you spent a little bit more money on better material, more highlight and colors and things like that. So it's the jewel of your public space.
And yeah, because you're solidifying. Yeah, exactly. Because you're solidifying that impression, that first impression that they've made. Once you solidify the impression, then everything else behind that has less and less and less chance of destroying that good impression that you've created. Now, a very important area that you must always maintain and keep in mind is cleanliness. But the most important space, other than your operatories, is the restrooms. The restrooms must always be clean, cleaner than any clean can be, because that impression will greatly stick with anybody, no matter how uncleanly they are and what they're not used to. You've got to make sure that those restrooms are clean and they always stay clean. And you can do that by the choice of the right kind of materials, because some materials may be wonderful, high-end, expensive materials, but they show dirt like crazy. You don't want those in the restrooms, because what are you going to do? Have somebody in there mopping or cleaning the restroom every hour? That's not practical. So you have to really think about what you're going to do with those public restrooms and how you finish those and what they look like to be able to maintain that cleanliness level and keep up the overall impression that you're giving to your patient. And then
let me throw a couple items in there, Jim. For some of our clients, or some of the discussion I have when it comes to public restroom, there's a couple of things that involve that you don't have a choice, and is the size. There's a minimum size based on the code. So, yes, it would be larger than your half bath at home, okay? So code is something that we must stick to. But in terms of aesthetic, convenient, comfort and all that, that is an area where a good investment in a good design in a well-equipped bathroom, public bathroom, is a huge marketing for your practice. Yes, it requires the staff to, to have a regular check on it to make sure that it's tidy. One of the things that will spoil everything for you without the patient touching anything is odor. When you pick a material, and first of all, the first thing that should eliminate and never put into a public bathroom is carpet. Get that out of the way, okay? When you eat, let's say you want to really, really make it wow, and you selected a wall material that have crevices and neat, intricate design and what have you, that it would be the worst thing to put into a bathroom. I myself like to have a bathroom that's almost as clean as a surgical suite. No crevices, because it's you can be in a 5-diamond resort facility, and if it's not taken care of, you go, I'm disappointed because I can smell things. Okay, smell is probably the first thing that you notice. If you have a public bathroom, spent a little bit more money on the material for your sink, put in a counter. Don't just put a wall-mounted sink and go, there you go. You'll give them good accessories, a changing table, because more than likely in your practice, you're going to have, whether you treat adults or children, the adult's going to bring their children with them from time to time. But those little things, just those little things help, help to tell them the message that you, as a business owner, as their dentist, care enough to make their life a little bit more convenient. You know, how many times you go into a bathroom, you don't know where to hang your coat, all right? Maybe a hook, maybe a place to put the purse, maybe a little seat that you can strap a little Joey in so that he's safe while you do your business. You know, all those little things really, really say a large, big statement about how much care that you thought of, and that you that you would do for your patient. It's huge. Okay, yeah. Bathrooms are huge an area that a lot of people just think, oh, it's a bathroom. What's the big deal? It is a huge deal.
No, it is, because the impression that it gives is that you actually do care. You care enough to be able to do these extra things. So that means that, yes, you're reinforcing the impression that you've already been given, that this is a high-quality space, I get high-quality service, these individuals care about me. Another in the restroom is definitely the exhaust fan. Make sure you have one that functions. Make sure you have one that's oversized so that it does, in fact, function. You must have an exhaust fan that works, because like Han says, odors are not pleasant. Unless they're good odors, and they typically don't come out of restrooms. On to the other areas that you need to actually feel very comfortable with is you need to have an overall warm and inviting, and it relates to your operatory. Your operatory must be a space that is easily accessible, has enough room in it. It doesn't feel like a dark, dingy cave. It obviously needs to feel and look clean. and the finishes and materials that you place in there need to be thought about so that you can project that kind of image. Obviously, we all know you want to keep that patient. Once you've got them in the chair and you give them excellent service, you have an opportunity to reinforce that or destroy it. So you got to be really, really careful. Then lastly, of course, when you have the ability to check out, the checkout area needs to function properly. It needs to be an area where you don't feel uncomfortable, in combination with maybe a consult room, that if you have to have a private area for your business people to talk about payment plans and those kind of things, it all needs to be thought about. The architecture will help reinforce that and provide for those services so that the overall experience is one of a great experience for the patient. And they go home and say to their husband and wife and their friends and their family and everybody at church and everybody they see on the street, you've got to go over and see this doctor. They just opened. They have a great facility. I'm going to go nowhere else, and you need to go there too, which affects your bottom line, which basically is the crux of our discussion tonight. So, Han, what else would you like to add?
Yeah, Jim, I just dawned on me too. Your checkout, that would be your last opportunity to impress. That would be the last place or the last memories or experience that they're going to take with them. So you make it count. It's just not simply give me your money and leave. You make it, you make sure that it's designed in a way that once they come out of the clinical area, they don't have to be, they don't have to be rerouted to a few mazes. That area needs to be sufficient in circulation space. Privacy is huge because when you deal with money or the lack of it for whatever circumstances, you want that issue to be able to be handled comfortably, discreetly. The checkout, the design of the checkout area need to be reflective at the similar level as your check-in. Okay, with a little bit more, in my opinion, with a little bit more of elbow room. Give it. It's not a corral like when you go and check out at retail stores. Get in line and just kind of pack and shuffle. It's a little bit more delicate. You want that impression, that last impression, to really, really be pleasant. Whatever the circumstances, you want it to be the last thing when they walk out, they're smiling and they go, "I'll see you the next time." Okay, so it's little detail, but it's huge.
That's it, Jim. So does a nice looking, aesthetically pleasing dental office really help the bottom line? The answer is yes.
Absolutely.
It does. And it greatly does. And more than most people think. So hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to learn something from tonight's show. Han, you were telling me a little bit about the show before that you had a topic during Dental Town, I believe, that you wanted to share with others for tonight.
I'm hoping that a few of the listener had at least read the particular posting. This has to do with a post that regarding additional parking requirement. The particular doctor have an existing practice and they have challenged with not enough parking. And the question was, can I purchase or acquire a sliver of land from my neighbor to provide me with additional parking needed? And that sliver of land happened to be from a residential property. Or at least the information I see seems to be. Okay, so Jim, what is some of the pros and cons or some of the hurdles that they may encounter to get to that point where whether that even are feasible. The first thing that I myself would look at or ask is, what can you do with the existing parking facility on your property that can be done differently to improve and or give you the additional parking you need without going through the, you know, the arduous process of acquiring a parcel or a part of a parcel of land to make things happen, you know, as we're discussing. So that would be my first simple thing, is what can be done with what you have now, if there's anything can be done. And then
let's say that they can't. Let's say they've already said that, or they've already looked at that, and there's really no way to add additional parking. So if you're looking at a adjacent residential property, it's zoned residential. The first thing you have to check with your zoning department is, can you utilize that property for parking, and how can you utilize it? And you do this before you buy it, not after you buy it. Do it before you sign on the bottom line, during that due diligence phase when you are in the process of buying, but you ask the local zoning and building officials what they require, because each municipality is different across the country. You could find ones that are saying, yep, no problem. You can park on this all the way up to the property line. You can put asphalt paving on it. You don't have to screen it. You don't have to do anything, which is fine. Then you know what you have. But in other municipalities, you may find that because it's adjacent, it's parking, it's adjacent to a residential, it has to be screened from the other residential spaces or areas or properties with a 6-foot-tall fence that has to be made out of brick with decorative wrought iron and has to have landscaping every so many other feet. That landscaping has to be of such and such and such and such quality. You need to know all that. You need to know what that is before you move forward with the idea of parking on it. But in general, is it a possible thing to do? Absolutely. We've recommended it and done it on many projects before. It can be done, but you need to know the parameters and the restrictions and what you're going to be required to do, and know that before you close on the property, so that, one, you buy enough to do the parking that you want to have, but also you buy enough to satisfy the requirements. If there's screening, if there's landscaping, if there's things that you have to do, what kind of lighting do you have to use? Where can the lighting be placed? There's always a big issue with parking lot lighting adjacent to residential. One of the biggest things you can run into is lights from a parking lot spilling onto somebody else's backyard or onto their house or onto their property. You want to get a bad neighbor real fast? Do that.
That's one way. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to do that. So, yeah, it can be done. It is not a deal closer, but find out what the particulars are. Once you know the particulars, and those are, you're comfortable with them, you've bought enough property to be able to accomplish that, then great, more power to you.
Now, there's only one other thing that I think that part of the due diligence that you know, must do is to look whether that proposed annex piece of land, can it be used? What I mean is, yes, it's your neighbor's backyard, and what's the big deal about buying it and using it? The restriction may be, is it currently wetland? If it is, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. So, you know, integrate a professional who understands this kind of stuff, be it us or someone else, you'll be okay. Well, with that, I'd like to thank everybody for spending a little bit of their time this evening and listening to the rant, Han and I rant and rave about the architecture and how things are so important about the way they look. We'll have another show next week. Again, if you have any questions, get a hold of us on our website, www.hjtdesign.com. Call us on our 800 number, 866-213-1268. Send us an email. On our website, you'll see all our podcasts from the previous episodes. We're up to number 22 now. So we've got 22 in the can. And, Han, I wanted to let you and everybody know that as of, day before yesterday, we now have Australia on our listening base. So we had somebody from Australia, a new country. So that's kind of cool.
We are conquering one at a time, Jim.
you're funny. Well, we do love this, and we do love the opportunity, and we're very thankful that you've at least spent a little bit of time, and hopefully it's been helpful, and we look forward to next time next week. On.
And thank you for tuning in and spending time with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.